you all that. Hey, hey, ain't gonna hide, gonna let all the fears like a mother nature is on my side. Got all of the loving.
Hello, everyone. Welcome once again to The New Now. I'm delighted to have Max Egan back with us. And today we have decided to chat about Ikigai, something close to my heart that I, you know, now that I live in Japan. And a general definition is finding your life's purpose, living your life's purpose, you know, why you get up in the morning, what you do and why you're doing it. And well, without further ado, hello, Max.
Nice to be here, brother. Thanks for having me on again. Yeah, it's always good to chat to you.
Delighted, delighted. So what do you feel about, you know, Ikigai and the way I've shared the definition?
No, it's good. It's really what life is about. It's something that I really love about Japanese culture. You know, when you get into the private sector of Japanese culture, I'm so interested in their government culture and how they run themselves in wars. But the private side of Japanese life is very admirable. They're very honorable people. And a lot of it is about self-exploration and spiritual advancement, you know, and I find that to be very attractive. You know, I think it's a great thing to do, and it's a good thing to focus your life on. I believe that we come here to grow our souls and to be the best we can be, and there's just ways through that, just certain philosophies you can apply to life that support that sort of a narrative, and that's what Ikigai is. I think it's great.
So how did you discover, you know, your Ikigai, your purpose in life? Maybe we can go back. You know, you've been at this for a long time, your spiritual growth, obviously, from, you know, the Crow House to a lot of the other efforts you've done throughout your life and existence. You know, where would you say you started to get to where you are today, and how you, you know, came across, you know, the challenges and the successes of your Ikigai?
Well, I kind of got pushed into it. I kind of avoided it for a long time. I woke up when I was very young to the fact that the world was all messed up. And so I just, you know, I tried to talk to people through my childhood. I tried to talk to people through my high school years. I ended up getting kicked out of four high schools for arguing with my teachers because they weren't teaching me anything about life. They were training to be a little cog in a big machine, you know. And by that time, I just thought, well, forget this. I'm just going to join a rock and roll band and live on the outside of society and just observe the freak show. And I kind of got pushed into it with when 9/11 happened. I mean, I'd spent most of my life looking at why are people so deranged? Why are people so superficial? Why don't they see that there's any real purpose to life? I remember asking my father when I was 16, you know, what's the meaning of life? And he said, there's no meaning to life, son. Just meet all the women that you can and rah, rah, rah. And I'm going, this is not a very good philosophy, Dad, you know? And, you know, so but when 9/11 happened, I kind of got pushed into it. I mean, seeing 997 people killed live on TV kind of made me realize that this secret world that I had been observing in the background was actually important and that it was actually coming for us. I mean, we'd always expected there to be some sort of a new world order thing happen. And you never expect it to really happen in your lifetime. But when that happened, I kind of got pushed into it. There was a whole bunch of stuff that happened in my life, and I blamed my wife, and I blamed all sorts of people. I had everything I owned stolen. All sorts of stuff went wrong in my life. But along the way of my life, I'd garnered all these life skills, all these particular skills. I didn't know they were life skills at the time. They were just certain skills. I was just good at certain things. And I've kind of found I can be good at anything I apply myself to. And I think that's the same with any people. If you actually apply yourself to something, you'll find that you can be at it. And I just look at stuff and think, well, they're doing it, so how hard can it be? So I just try it myself and end up finding out that I can do it. So, you know, I'd garnered all these life skills. And once I got all the life skills I needed to do exactly what I'm doing now, speaking out on public stages and making videos and just doing what I can to try to help improve the general consciousness of the world, then the universe took everything away from me, and I had two choices. I could either commit suicide and go live in a storm drain somewhere, or I could step onto my true path and believe in myself and share my knowledge and share my view of the world with other people in the hope that I could make a difference that way. As soon as I did that, everything fell into place, and my path has just kind of unfolded before me. But I needed pushing. I needed prompting. I needed to be pushed with my back to the wall, really, before I was prepared to put all the stuff down and stop blaming people externally for my own problems. I mean, I look at it now and I think, well, actually, I attracted all that stuff to me. You know, I might have been a nice person basically underneath, but I was too superficial in so many ways, and I attracted it all to me. And the universe will give you what you need to step onto that path. It may not be a pleasant experience, but if you're open to it and you're really willing to look at yourself and look at the world, you can see why these things happen. And what it's about, I mean, you come into this world alone and you leave this world alone, and it is what you gather along the way, what your consciousness evolves into along the way, and what sort of a legacy you've left behind. Have you improved the world by your presence in it, or were you just another pleb doing the wrong thing, which is kind of leading everything to disaster? So yeah, and we've got a choice in this. We've all got a choice in this. And I think it's an important way to look at it. Now, depending on what culture you're in, you'll find that these sorts of understandings are in all cultures. This is what the whole Ikigai thing is about. It's really about finding yourself, finding your own path, and everything I just said, making the world a better place because you exist, and leaving this world with an expanded consciousness to take that back to source or back to God or whatever you want to call it, So that's what I my view of the whole thing anyway, and that's kind of what set me on my path.
You think we're born into our ikigai, or it's something that we have a choice with? What do you think of destiny and fate? And looking back on your life, now that you've lived a fair amount.
I don't know about destiny or fate. I think we can change these things. I think nothing is predestined. We can always change it, and nothing is really fated. I think we can change this ourselves by our own attitude. I look at the world as being an emotional mirror, and it's what you put into it. If you're going to be upset about certain things, then the universe is going to give you more of that and keep you upset until you figure out that you're mirroring this yourself. You're having an emotional conversation with reality all the time. It's a language that you've forgotten exists. And we're speaking this language, this electromagnetic language of feeling and emotion all the time, every minute of the day, but we're not listening to what is being said back to us. And it will mirror all these things back to you. Everything that I've done really is just put down my stuff with people, put down my stuff with myself. I was so hard on myself for so many years. I used to think, things went wrong in my life simply because I was me. I was just not a good person. I was just useless. I was because I was judging myself by the parameters that the system gives you to judge yourself by. If you haven't made this much and got this much in your bank account, and you haven't got a beautiful wife and 2.3 kids and a white picket fence, well, you're a failure, And reality is not like that. It takes a long while to get over this hump. You can't look at yourself and apply your understandings of yourself by parameters that are not your own, the parameters that are given to us by this system, especially. That will destroy you. And I'd kind of allowed that to happen. I mean, almost even through my school life and stuff, I was thinking, why can't I have conversations with people? Why can't I just be one of the guys, And I realized that you kind of have to lower your socio-intellectual profile to the point that you're talking about absolutely meaningless stuff in order to be one of the guys, I figured out no one wants to hang around with someone smarter than themselves. This isn't fun. And all our society seem to want to do is have fun. They're not really interested in spiritual involvement or looking at a bigger picture. It's just about instantaneous gratification of the moment. That's what a lot of our societies are based on. So you start to look at this sort of stuff, and you realize that, okay, well, there's a better way. But I was absolutely my own worst enemy for so much of my life until I realized that it's an emotional mirror. I had some meditations and I had some experiences back around 2008. And I had these incredibly enlightening moments in some of these meditations, and I was just able to look at myself with a certain level of clarity and stop judging myself, realize that I'm flawed, the same as everybody else. That's the whole point. You come here flawed, but you can change the path you're on. You can change. Nothing is fated. You can change everything because it is an emotional mirror. If you start having a different emotional conversation with reality, it's going to show you the way. It may not be what you expect, but it's going to show you the way through. And I've often said, if you throw yourself to the wind, you can ride it. Just don't judge where you're going to go. Don't have a stake in the outcome of where you're going to be headed, because if you do, you're going to miss all these little side paths along the way. And they might be incredible places to explore, and you'll end up in a place that you never even dreamed was possible simply because you were open to letting the universe guide you. And that's what I've done with my life for the last probably 18 years or so. And it's worked wonders. It's really changed my perspective of everything. It's changed the path that I'm on. And you kind of, when you've got no stake in the outcome, you don't get stressed, you don't get disappointed, you don't go through all these obstacles that we set up for ourselves, to stop us finding our path. It's even when someone says, I used to say to people, what's the one thing you want to do in the world? And what is it that's stopping you doing that? And they'll come up with all these reasons why they can't do this stuff. And these are all obstacles they're putting in the way of themselves. You know, you could just actually go and do it and let it unfold the way it is. It may not be the way you planned it and the way you thought it would, but you'll end up in this place, which might even be better than something you ever imagined. So, you know, it's just being open to that and, you know, not judging life by your material gains and not judging life by, you know, the certain goals you set yourself. You get in this corporate world and this business world, you gotta have goals, you gotta have these plans and do these milestones and get to these things. Well, I suppose if that's what you want to do, if that's what your life is about, getting that big bank account and that white picket fence and all that sort of stuff. But you know, I think there's better ways of looking at this. And so yeah, I mean it's a remarkable thing. I mean, life can take you anywhere and not where you expected. And you can have incredible moments in your life and do incredible things and reach incredible people. And that's another thing I've always thought is that every person that you meet, every interaction you have, there's meaning for it. There's something that you two can learn from each other, even if it's just a person on a shop counter, you know. Most people go in there and they'll treat the servant person on the shop counter like trash. It's actually, you could make this person's day. You could really help this person by just giving them a smile. They might go home. That'll mirror out to their family. You could end up, something fantastic could happen in their family life simply because you were kind to this person.
That's true.
And maybe you met them because that was an opportunity for you to be kind, for you to be in Lakesh. I am another yourself. Treat the person the way you would be treated, the way you would want to be treated. You know, and you can make a huge difference in your life looking at the world that way. So, I mean, I think that's what it's really all about, brother. I think so much of the stuff they do to us is to keep us off this path. You know, so we're just living in these social structures, thinking all this stuff we do is real and means something. No, it doesn't. What means something is your spiritual growth, your emotion, and the emotional energy that you put into the field and give to others.
You know, it's funny. There's another Japanese saying basically translates as "you're not doing it because you're not doing it." You know, so it kind of gets back to you know, what you've said. It's really as simple as that. You know, you put all the excuses in the way and you're just not living how you want to live simply by not living how you want to live, you know, and the rest is the challenges to get there.
It's all this external pain in the way I want to live because you made me do something. No one made you do anything. You know, you can actually step onto your own path, and it's really not that hard to do. You just got to put down all the trappings of society. It's kind of a freak out for a lot of people. You know, they wonder what's going to happen. And even when I came to Mexico here, I mean, imagine if I wasn't in that mindset when I left Australia and came to Mexico. When I came to Mexico, my place got visited by the police a couple of days after I left, and they made all these false claims about me, claimed I was threatening police officers and all sorts of things, which I wasn't. And then 3 days after I arrived in Mexico, my bank accounts got shut down. So here I am in a third world country. I can't speak the language and I've got no access to funds. You know, if I was stuck on that path, a lot of people would have, you know, had a breakdown when that sort of thing happened. But I just kind of went, okay, well, this is the new path. Now I've got to find a way through this and I'll just let it unfold. And it did. So, you know, it's all about experience, brother, and how you emotionally react to the different things that happen in your life. I mean, that could have been a moment where I had a meltdown and stressed out or whatever, and I just was calm, looked at it, and went, okay, well, this is the new path. This is what I say often, to be able to face infinity without flinching. Now, infinity being a myriad of possibilities, infinite amount of possibilities could happen any moment. You don't know what the next minute's going to bring. And whatever it is, you need to be able to just step onto that path with serenity and realize this is the new direction you're going in. You know, to face infinity without flinching, to be able to face with serenity odds and circumstances that were not included in your calculations, and to simply be able to move forward on that path to the best of your ability and take it where it leads you. Because it's leading you somewhere, otherwise it wouldn't have happened. Obviously, something that you need in your life, something you need in your spiritual growth for this to go take you to the next level. Are you prepared to make that step? Or are you simply going to freak out and blame someone else and fall down and cower up and live in a hole and go, oh my God, poor me? You know, so it's an opportunity. All these things are opportunity. Even the Chinese word for a crisis and opportunity are interchangeable. I think that's an interesting thing.
Really, that is interesting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's great, you know.
Well, how, if you don't mind my asking, how did you survive through the challenges, you know, landing in Mexico? I've been there. You know, I remember when I had to learn how to drive a stick. I bought a car and some guy was supposed to teach me after I paid for the car, and instead he drove me to the middle of Mexico City, jumped out and ran away. And so I was in the middle of Mexico City, my first time on a stick. Literally, the traffic if you've been there, which I'm sure you probably haven't.
Oh,
And
yeah.
I literally was thrown into the deep end, and I had no choice but to learn to drive a stick within 1 minute, and I did. I stalled a few times and I bumped the walls once or twice, but I made it out. Being thrown into Mexico yourself, what do you have any interesting sharing stories specifically on how you got over those challenges?
Well, just applying myself to it. I mean, I went online. After a few weeks, I worked out, banks and all that sort of stuff. Got an online bank and a few things. Got my finances happening again. But I always travel, expecting something bad to happen. So I've always got a decent amount of cash on me when I travel. I've always, like, I've
Indeed.
never actually bought anything at a shop anywhere using a credit card, at a supermarket or anything. I've bought airline tickets online. And I've bought sometimes packets of tea bags or whatever from Amazon because you can't get them in Mexico. It's the only place I can get them, much as I don't like using Amazon. And that's a debit card that I use. I've got to actually put money in that account in order to use the card. So, I've used cash everywhere I've gone for my whole life. I have no track record of any, I don't have a credit rating. I don't have any of that sort of stuff. I've never participated in the system, really. So, when the system threw me out, it didn't really, all I lost really was my bank account, because that's the only part of the system that I actually use. And I had enough cash on me. I had a few grand on me that I always travel with. So I was able to get through a couple of months. You live here very cheaply in Mexico. It's like about, I think, $5,000 or $6,000 a year I can survive in Mexico, which is pretty amazing, Yeah, I mean, that's just the way I did it. I mean, I just sort of went, okay, well, here I am now. I've just got to take the next step. And if I do the right thing, the universe will show me which direction to go. And like I say, I don't ever really plan any of these things. It just kind of happens. I mean, I think that's why I've done so many things. People say to me, how have you ever done all these things when you don't plan to do them? And I say, well, it's because I just throw myself to the wind. And if I wasn't prepared to do that, I never would have done any of these things because I would have had other plans.
It's true.
So I just don't make plans, I just let things unfold. So yeah, I mean, I had enough cash to get by. Fortunately, I had somewhere I could go and stay. I mean, I contacted a friend in Mexico and I said, well, look, I'm coming. So it'd be great. 'Cause he'd said, if you come, I'll make sure you've got somewhere to land, a place to, a safe house to come to. And I emailed him and said, well, I actually put out a code on the radio show. I said, if you hear me say I'm going gray or I'm going dark for a couple of weeks, that means I'm coming to Mexico. And I want to take you up on that offer to look after me, And he heard me say it on the show and he emailed me and said, oh my God, I'm not even in Mexico at the moment. I'm in somewhere else, like Nicaragua or somewhere, El Salvador. I don't know. He was down Central America somewhere. And when I arrived in Mexico, I arrived here. I had no exit tickets. So they were really sus on letting me in. So you've got to have an exit ticket. I'm going, well, I don't have one. So I don't know when I'm going to be exiting and blah, blah, blah. But I've been here 6 times before. I've never overstayed a visa. It's all good. Talked to the guy. They ended up letting me in.
Oh,
And I've
nice.
arrived at Acapulco Airport. I've got no phone number. I've got no phone. I've got no contact details. I don't know an address where I'm going, and I don't even know who's picking me up. He just said, I'll have one of my drivers pick you up. So I just arrived in Acapulco. Thought, well, I hope someone's here, And walked out, and someone was there, and they
Wow.
took me back, looked after me, and kept me in a house for a week, and gave me time to find somewhere I want to be, and blah blah blah. So I was lucky that I had that, but just arriving here with nothing in Acapulco, going, well, here I am. I'm just throwing myself to the wind. I hope there's someone here to pick me up, if I fall, and it all worked out. So yeah.
I understand. Like going back to, your exciting illumination moments when you were doing your meditations in 2008. What do you mean by those? Could you describe some of them?
Well, I had this epiphany. I just had this really weird thing happen to me. I can describe it for you. I was kind of sitting in a chair similar to this one. I was just sitting there and I was meditating. And then suddenly it was like I was outside my body and I was looking at myself from every possible angle all at once. And it wasn't like a whole bunch of TV screens, just like I was everywhere around me all at once. I was connected to everything. And, I saw this, and everything looked like mesh. Everything looked like green mesh. Like I was sitting there with my eyes closed, and and suddenly I could see the room around me. I could see the computer. I could see all the walls. I could see through the walls. I could see people walking down the street outside. I could see across the road the houses and then back. And then I could see the hills in the distance. And it was like I could see everything. Like I could see the whole world. The flat earth was all like this. It was like it was a flat plane. And I was looking at absolutely everything. And I was connected to everything around the world. And then I had this moment where I was sitting outside myself and I'm looking at myself. And then I saw this light appear at the top of my head and like dropped through my head and went through my body and it hit the floor and I rippled out like a drop of water in a pool. And all of the mesh, the 3D mesh, turned white and silver. And then it was like just this opening. This it's hard to explain, but it's like this vortex just opened, and suddenly there were like millions of universes, and I was connected to all of them. And I had this emotional download, and I felt all of the love and all of the pain and all the sorrow of all the souls in this multiverse. And it came into me, and I just took this breath, like, and I fell out of my chair, and I landed on my knees on the floor, and I cried for 7.5 hours before I could even get back into my chair. Thinking, oh my God, what am I going to do when my son comes home from school? He's going to wonder what the hell's going on with his dad, you know? But I don't even know how to describe it, but it's like I connected to a quantum field, like to every living soul. And I realized that it's an emotional journey. And that's when I put myself in I thought, okay, well, I can change the world by changing my perspective to it and changing my emotional conversation. And I realized the true nature of prayer is to, it's not to pray for something. If you pray for something, you're acknowledging that it doesn't exist. This is a negative affirmation. You pray for love, you're saying there is no love in the world. You pray for peace, you're saying there is no peace in the world. If there was love and there was peace, what would you feel like? Put yourself in that emotional state because that is the true nature of prayer. It's like a Native American will walk into a stone circle. He wants it to rain. He won't pray for rain. He'll stand in the stone circle and he'll put himself in the emotional state where he is standing in the pouring rain. He can feel it running down his skin. He can shiver in the coldness of the water drops, feel his toes squishing in the mud and smell it running down the walls of the hut, you know, and he'll put himself in that state and then the rain will come and it will rain. It's the prayer has already been answered. I've said to people, if you're looking for your perfect partner, what would it feel like if that perfect partner was already in your life and you're sitting there? And I'm not saying pretend you've got someone in the house with you, but just what would it feel like if you were, you know, you think you need this person to complete you? Well, what would that completion feel like? And why would you even consider another person wants to be with you if you're not complete within yourself anyway? So it's kind of a negative affirmation. You know, what would this feel like? Put yourself in that emotional state where that perfect partner is already in your life. And I guarantee you, within a month or two, that person is going to walk straight into your life. And I found all this out on this day. And I thought, well, wow, yeah, how do I get this word out to people? How do I harness the power of the internet? And I thought, well, being a radio host would be good. Maybe I don't have to use the internet. Maybe I can be a radio host. I didn't know anything about internet radio. I didn't know about YouTube. I didn't know about any of that stuff. And I knew about YouTube, but I didn't know about any, and I only just discovered YouTube, which I thought was a place high school kids used to go and upload their videos. And I realized there's this whole truth movement there, and there's all these people expressing their lives on there. And I thought, this is interesting, you know. So I started making slideshows and put it out there. But anyway, I put myself in this emotional state where I was a radio host. I didn't change my life in any way. So what would it feel like if I was a radio host and I was speaking to people and the world was listening? You know, and I put myself in that state of confidence, that state of knowing that the message was getting out, just in the emotional state. I didn't change anything in my life. And then within 6 weeks, I was offered a job as a radio host on a real radio station in Kansas. Hook up online, speak out on FM radio. You tune in, the dial in your car, you know, not internet radio. And that was simply by changing my emotional state. And I did absolutely nothing to secure that position. It just got, I got emailed, someone asked me, I like your voice. I like what you said on an interview the other day. We'd like to give you your own radio show. And I'm like, wow, that's how it works, you know? So it's this emotional mirror, it's this emotional conversation that you're having. And that's what I got out of that conversation, out of that meditation, the most important thing. All of these souls that were disconnected and like feeling all that love and all that pain and all that disconnection of those people because they didn't know there's a higher language, not just the five senses, there's a lot above the five senses.
Oh,
There's
yeah.
a lot of things you can do electromagnetically. This is an electrical universe. You know, The prana that you see at night when you turn the lights off, that static electricity, that's what everything's made of. And that electricity itself is conscious. That is where consciousness comes from. We're all connected to that. So we're really, there's only one of us here. Different aspects of that electrical energy, now thought in the mind of God, if you will. And we're all connected. You know, that's why I finish every show in Lakesh. I am another yourself. We are all each other. And once we can bring this unity together and realize that everyone's going to think differently to you, everyone's got a different perspective, different aspect, and that's the way it should be. But you know, you can respect them for that. You don't have to hate them for that. You don't have to be argumentative with it. Perhaps if you just discuss your different perspectives, you'll come up with something incredible for each of you. You know, so you know, like I said, every person you meet, there's a lesson in there. You might tell me something that I really don't like. I mean, a great saying I saw someone wrote once was, "I don't like you, so I need to spend more time with you." Because by being with someone I don't like and finding what it is I don't like about you, I can heal that in myself, and so can you heal it in yourself. So I'm not going to attack you because I don't like you. I'm going to find out what it is about me that makes me feel like that, because obviously there is some reflection of myself in you that I haven't dealt with yet, you know, and it's an important way of looking at things. So that's what I got out of this meditation, and it changed my life. It really changed my life. And if you get in ever that situation where you're feeling depressed and things are going wrong in your life, just realize it's an emotional mirror. You know, you've put yourself in this position so that because there's a lesson you need to learn. There's a test here for you. It's like going through an army obstacle course. You know, you got to this big ladder, rope ladder. You just can't possibly climb. Well, yes, you can. You know, otherwise you wouldn't have put yourself there. You know, it's like I said, all the stuff that happened to me that threw me onto this path, I brought it all on myself. And I look back at it. I can blame the people who stole from me. I can blame my wife. I can blame all sorts of stuff. But I can also look at the emotional energy I was in and realize what I was attracting. You know, it's just an important lesson, brother.
For sure. Do you remember your first topic on the radio show, your first host topic? What you discussed? Did you get to choose or was it?
Well, the first time my voice ever appeared online, it was someone recorded a little conversation I was having at a party, and everyone ended up silent, and I was speaking ended up speaking to a room of about 20 or 30 people, and someone recorded it, and it was called In Lakesh, about how we are all each other. And I was telling people to look at the space behind your eyes, that space where you get back to there and you can't see your hands anymore, that nothingness. That's what I mean. As Alan Watt once said, I think Alan Watt, or was it Alan Watts? I get them confused, because there was the Irish radio host and there was the Buddhist philosopher. But the Buddhist philosopher once said that what is, yeah, when you die, what could be the worst possible thing? Well, it would be nothing, nothingness, living in nothingness. And what is nothing? He said, well, nothing is what your head looks like to your eyes. And I thought that was a great analogy of what nothing is. I mean, you can't see your head. Just behind your eyes, there's empty space. There's a nothingness there. And that nothingness is where consciousness lives, and it's what's watching through your eyes. And that nothingness is it's huge. You look at the space behind your eyes, it's like there's a whole universe in there. It's not it, there's no way this could be contained in this little head, you know. It's that nothingness, that electrical nothingness that is connected to everybody else. And that nothingness is what is watching through everybody's eyes. When you really look at reality that way, and it's a way of bringing the mind of God together and a way of removing the baggage, the people that don't get it, that don't make it through, just everyone to make it. Not everyone's going to be up to the grade, and it doesn't really matter because there's only one of us here anyway. So where is the problem if some of this baggage falls off the side? Really, where is the problem? You know, so it's looking at the world from that perspective. And I don't know, it just changes you when you start looking at this sort of stuff, and when you start thinking this way, it changes your whole outlook on life, and it changes the way you apply yourself to life as well. And that's what I learned from it all. And yeah, I mean, and I'm still learning. I mean, I'm no way an expert on any of this. You know, I'm still a total, you know, infant finding my way through. But at least I'm aware of it now, and I've proven it as well in my own life. You know, if you get annoyed with something, you're in a bad mood, suddenly you're hitting your hands with a hammer and you're slamming your fingers in doors and all sorts of stuff goes on, you know. And when you're in that good state, everything just unfolds for you. So there is this electromagnetic conversation. It's important that people hear it. And like I said, once you realize that there's only really one of us here, well, all your problems with other people kind of break down. I mean, sure, there's stuff people I get angry with, I get frustrated with, situation of what's going on in Gaza at the moment. I'm really, really upset about this and really annoyed about this because I think it's so pointless to see all this killing and all this stuff when it could be solved so simply. But people, oh, there is no simple solution. No, that's you. That's your emotional mirror that you're creating. There actually is a simple solution. But you can't talk to people about it because that's airy fairy, new age, false spirituality. It's not in my King James Bible. This is just unfortunately the way people think. So, faced with that, you've just got to let people be themselves, let them do what they're going to do, and realize that it's a personal journey for all of us. A lot of the people, even a lot of the people dying in Gaza at the moment, perhaps that's why they came here. So you would witness that. So you would have the spiritual growth that you need. And you should appreciate the sacrifice they're making and take the opportunity to look within yourself through all of these situations.
Yeah, that's one of the hardest things for people to accept sometimes, is some of the harder things going on in the world are there to help you through your own personal journey and done on purpose, let's say, by the souls that have come in
Yeah, well,
to share.
you're
Yeah.
part of it. You're
Yeah.
involved in it because you're witnessing it. So you have an emotional involvement, and it's how you are going to apply that to your life and what you can do to change it from right here where you sit.
I would agree. Well, what would you say your definition of imagination would be then? Taking this into play, because I would say it's a huge part in change, from where you're on your knees crying for 7 hours to, many years later where you are now and where you've been. How did your imagination come into play in all of that?
Well, imagination really, I mean, it's mind. A lot of imagination is people being stuck in mind. Even they're worried about their past or they're worried about their future. They're imagining a really terrible future. They're living in apprehension of what the future may bring, or they're in a state of turmoil about their past, neither of which exists now. So both exist in the imagination, really. People aren't in now. They're not right here, right now, having that conversation. Imagination, sure, it's looking at what you could predict for your future or where you might go or imagining where you might be in a few years. I've kind of put a lot of that stuff down. I have no clue where I'll be in a few years because I have absolutely no stake in the outcome of this life. I'll be gone soon from this world. I'm 66. I'm not going to be here forever. So I try to live like now, right now, and just be in that moment. That's the moment that we miss, but that's where we are all the time. But we're constantly worried about the future, which is lost in your imagination, constantly stressed about the past, which is lost in your imagination. So, I mean, imagination, sure, it's a useful thing if you're creating something. I'm building a house, or I'm building this, or I'm doing a piece of artwork, or even when I do the radio show, sometimes when I do my reports, I'll have this idea of what I want to do, and then I just forget it, and I just go completely off script, and I just do it. Even when I've done my public speaking talks, I create this huge slideshow and this huge presentation, and halfway through it, my best talks when I've looked at videos, I mean, halfway through it, I just forget that, and I sit on a stool and I just start talking to people, and it just flows out, and it's like you tap into source, and it just flows through you because you're in the now. People get lost in their imagination. They get trapped by their imagination, and they have a stake in the outcome because they're imagining what this is going to do. So, like I said, there's all these side paths that you're not looking at and you're not seeing because you're trapped in that state that you've got in it being the way you imagined it would be. And half the people don't even understand how the world works. I don't understand anything about this electric language. They don't understand that there is not even any real matter. It's all just condensed energy, everything. So, I think a lot of people get stuck in their imagination, brother. I really do. I mean, I think it can be imagination, but it can also be a trap, and people need to open themselves up and be prepared to move on to other paths. I really think they do.
Yeah, how would you say maybe connecting, like one of the old things that sat with me before I, moved, to Asia was when old style Japanese people were asked where they did their thinking, they used to point to their center, their hara, whereas Western people would point to their head. So it's very interesting having a different brain in their guts and their system. I mean, it's changed here, no doubt, over the last, 40, 50 years. But what do you feel about that? I've heard we have a secondary brain in our guts, our will. Are at the center of our body. connecting that perhaps to their imagination. Have you had
Well,
any
yeah, I mean,
experience with that?
this is stuff that the Native Americans used to talk about their will. If you look at even with the Don Juan books and stuff,
Right.
the Yaqui Indians, like when they'd attach their will to something, like jumping across a river or whatever, they could attach their will to that rock, and it would literally the rock would pull them, So I think this is possible. I mean, just look at some of the stuff, the Shaolin monks. Yeah, so will is important. I mean, your will to achieve, but like I said, it's when you get a stake in that outcome is the problem, So, but I think they were totally correct with all this sort of stuff. I mean, a lot of the native cultures around the world have a completely different way of looking at things. Even when you start looking at the Matrix, jumping across the buildings and to believe that you can do this and knowing it's a knowing. That's why I've often said belief is the enemy of knowledge, because you believe in something and this sort of messes up the way you think about things. Knowledge doesn't need to be believed. Knowledge is just known. And not there is no belief required when you know something, And knowing that you can do things, having that confidence in yourself and your will to achieve, your will to believe in yourself really is what it comes down to, And there are no obstacles here that you cannot overcome. Even some of the ancient stories that I've seen of some of the like the tunnels that are built that are apparently built with will. I mean, you're kind of getting into really esoteric ground here.
Sure.
In this story, there was a story of a Tibetan monk who lived high on a mountain, and he just lived on nettles. That's all he lived on. And there were people who used to go and see him, and he was so skinny because he just lived on nettles, and he'd basically gone a bit green because he just lived on nettles. And people would go and see this guy and ask him about reality, and he would say it's all fiction. You can mold reality like Play-Doh. And to demonstrate it to one of his students, apparently he put his hand on the wall and he pushed his hand into the wall, into the stone wall, up to the elbow. And apparently you can still go to that cave. Tourists go and climb up to that cave to see the hole that he put in the rock with his hand. And you can see the fingers and the whole thing. So, I think we're capable of just about anything through our will if we can really realize what we're here for and the power that we have. And I think some of these Shaolin monks, some of the stuff they do, jumping up cliffs and bending steel and levitating things. I mean, all of this can be done. All of this is possible. Even when you look at the power of will, it explains how a lot of the ancient monuments were built and stuff, because there's no way we can do this.
I would
I
agree,
think the technology that they used to do a lot of this stuff was inner technology. We're trying to create these machines which will do this stuff for us, levers and pulleys and machines and this and that. We can do it all with ourselves. We have technology in ourselves which far surpasses anything we can do. But we've had a lot of it taken and removed from us. We're just not taught that it exists. Something about the English language is that there aren't words in English to explain spiritual concepts and explain these type of concepts. The words simply don't exist. So, I often use the word dharma, the Indian word dharma, to explain it to people. I mean, what is dharma? Dharma is finding the right through the machine, the white path through life, so that all the cogs of the universe mesh and everything just works, and you are walking your perfect path through life, and nothing ever phases you, nothing goes wrong. It's just your perfect path through life. How do you find it? Well, you find it by doing the right thing at the right time, in the right way, for the right reason. What is this? What do you deem to be right? Well, is it based in love? Because there are only two energies, fear and love. Is it based in love? Is it based in that energy? And that's how you, I mean, you could write a whole thesis on explaining what the word Dharma means to people, but if you're in speaking Hindi, you've just got to say Dharma, and they know what it means in all of its aspects. We don't have words like that in English. So being an English person and trying to find this spiritual connection to life, we understand reality because we spell in our heads. We spell stuff, we apply it to physics, all these man-made concepts. My understanding of reality is based on my understanding of the language that I speak. Because if there aren't words in that language to explain reality, well, how am I ever going to figure it out? So that's what they've kind of done to us, which is why they've pushed English out and made English a universal language, get everybody speaking English, because it disconnects them from those higher spiritual concepts, I think that's an important thing to look at as well, and you'll never find the answer to any of this stuff trying to explain it to people in English. And it's people's belief in what physics says is possible. Now, I would suggest that the only thing that is impossible is that which you believe is impossible.
I
So
would
maybe you
agree.
should put down your belief and get back in touch with this inner knowing, and knowing that you are connected to all that is, and that there is no impossibility. There is a world of infinite possibility. But if there's a single consciousness here and we're all connected, and 99% of the people think all this physics stuff is real, well, you're up against, you're sort of fighting an uphill battle trying to get too much done, which is probably why this guy went and lived up on the mountain and just ate Nephilim, just to get away from that energy, so he could figure it out on his own,
I would agree. I mean, here's something you may find interesting is I used to have a 1950 something dictionary, huge, big enough to do some damage to someone when you throw it. And at the front, it said to put in every English word ever. That was the intent of this dictionary, right? And now most of those words have disappeared. But one word that came to me when you were chatting and even at the beginning of a conversation that you don't find anymore was omnify, which meant to cause to make one. Like you actually going out, like what you said, we're all one. But it's not a concept you sit on your couch and meditate on. You actually get off your ass and you go into the world, do as you've done in lots of ways and help the world to become one, help through your actions.
Well, it's understanding like the self-work. What is the self-work all about? We get lost in this little self. I want to improve myself. You got to realize there's only one self. We're all part of the self. So you can't just sit there and isolate yourself in meditation and think that all this stuff's going to change the world. You've actually got to take these spiritual understandings that you get from these experiences and apply them to the world that you live in. I mean, you're in this 3D world with physical stuff around you. Could be a clue there. Perhaps you're supposed to participate, So, that's what people fail to do. It's what it becomes all about me, 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 me. I'm sitting here in my little chamber and I'm secluded from the world and I'm good. I'm working on my own growth. And often you're neglecting the self around you because we are all part of the self. I think that's an important lesson for people to have, an important perspective for people to look at when they're looking at meditation and all these sorts of things. You can't isolate yourself from it. Sure, you can get some good knowledge and understandings about yourself and how the body works, but if you're not applying that to the people around you, what was the point? You can't just do that and sit there and think, oh, wow, I've reached another level. I'm getting closer to guru stage. It doesn't work that way. It really doesn't. You've got to be prepared to look at people and see the reflection of yourself in those people and what you can learn for them, what you can give to them, and what you can learn from them, what they can give to you, without taking. I mean, and like I said, every experience, you can get something from that experience. They can give something to you. You don't even know. They don't even know that they're giving it to you. It was simply that new perspective, that new thing they said. And I've had things happen in shops where someone said something to me. It didn't mean anything to me. And then a week later, I'll meet someone on a bus and I'll say something else. And I go, whoa, that's with that. And just, whoa. And I can have this epiphany because I've taken that energy on board and I'm prepared to sit down. I don't believe anything. Like I said, belief is the enemy of knowing. Belief is the enemy of knowledge. You've got to let these things unfold on their own. And when it becomes self-evident, then it requires no belief, And you can apply all these understandings to your life. And again, I mean, it's kind of difficult being English and speaking English, but if you can get above that language and look at the emotional language that you are speaking. Something that I said in one of my films back in 2010, a film, The Awakening, I was talking about the temples in Egypt. A lot of these things aren't temples, they're books. Because you can walk into the temple in Karnak or in Abydos or something like that, and you feel this, whoa, what is that? And there's these hieroglyphs around the wall. And the hieroglyphs will to the uninitiated, they're just pretty stories, but to the initiated, they will tell you what that emotion is that you're feeling and how it can be harnessed and spoken. And I would suggest a lot of what this world is about is learning that language of feeling an emotion. I mean, if you're going to leave this world and go to the next world, like heaven or ascend to the fifth dimension, whatever people think it is, whatever their concept is, their belief system dictates what it is. When you get there, I guarantee you're not going to have this physical body with you, and you're probably not going to be speaking in this language that you're speaking now. What you're going to be speaking in is higher languages of feeling and emotion. And this is what you came here to learn in this world. If you are not equipped with that knowledge when you leave this world, then you're destined to come back and do it again and learn, try to get the knowledge again. I think that's why they've destroyed so much of the ancient world. But the way to do it is still there. The way to get in contact with this language is still there. We can still talk to people I'd say you could call it telepathically, but really it's emotionally. You can feel the emotion in a room when you walk into a room. Like if a couple's been fighting, you walk in there and go, "Oh, I can cut the air with a knife." We've all had that experience, you know, because they're charging the field around you. They're speaking a higher language and they don't even realize it. And we're doing this on every aspect of our lives. And I think that's a lot of what this world's about. I think that's why those ancient structures existed, to teach you, to help you understand that language of feeling and emotion. Because you're going to need it when you leave here. And if you're not equipped with it, well, you're going to come back and you're going to keep coming back. I actually was speculating a couple of reports ago that I think we actually come back and live the same life over and over again in the same time zone. And this would explain deja vu to me. While we have that moment of deja vu, and you know you've done this before. And I pointed out that when I actually stepped off the path that I was on and stepped onto the new path I'm on now, and just allowed things to unfold and allowed this path I'm on to be related to my own spiritual growth and applying that to the world and everything I've just gone through, I haven't had a deja vu since then. It's like I changed the fate or the destiny that I had constructed for myself before. And I don't have any of these deja vu experiences anymore. I haven't had a deja vu in like 17 or 18 years because I don't know what's around the corner. I have no plans. I'm totally out of whatever element I was in. I mean, I never, ever expected I'd be living in Mexico. Never thought I'd have a gray cat. I mean, I didn't expect any of this stuff, you know? And here I am, and I'm just letting the world guide me where it wants to guide me. And I don't have those experiences anymore. I think I've changed the path that I generally walk when I come to this world. And I think I've done this over and over again. And I would suggest a lot of people have. And you know, the more we come here and we have babies and rah, 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 and they go through and don't learn. And so the population grows. It just keeps excelling. And I speculate that a lot of why they've done this is to harvest people's souls. I want people to come here and have no spiritual growth so they can harvest their souls at the end of the experience. I mean, this is still stuff I'm going through in my head and trying to work out. But I think we're kind of in a bit of a people farm, a bit of a soul farm, but we have an opportunity to get through it. And if we can get through it, I think we can save the rest of the souls as well, because it's a single consciousness. There's really only one of us here. So it's kind of getting into really esoteric ground. But I think there's a lot to that. I think we can change our path. We can change our destiny. That's why I don't believe in fate or destiny or all that sort of stuff. I mean, you can create that. You can fate your own reality. You can destine your own reality to failure the way we always do. But you know, we've got to really look at things from a higher perspective, I think, a higher harmonic, and realize that we can change it. And I think a lot of us probably have done this enough times that we can come back now. I wouldn't be surprised if some of us make it through and we choose to come back into this grand amnesiac experiment because we know there's only one of us here. It's no good me going and saving myself because we're all part of the self. You're never going to save everything by saving your personal self. Sure, it's an important thing to have your own perspective and realize that you come in here alone, you leave alone, everything I said before, but don't neglect the self. You realize that you can make change to the world simply by being the best you can be. And that's what you come here to do.
Yeah, I mean, like I've lived in Mexico myself. And I've also heard different parts of this plane or planet or Earth give you different feelings. Have you found your dreams changing or your interactions with people? Like I've had some strange experiences living in that part of the world, Mexico City. I don't know if you've ever been to Tepoztlán yet, up the mountain there, an hour and a half south of Mexico City. But have you found your dreams have altered any significantly in moving to
No,
a location?
I'm still looking. I feel still pretty much like a fish out of water here in many ways. I mean, it's not something that I expected to not anywhere I expected to be. I still can't speak Spanish properly, so it's very difficult for me to communicate with people. I think it's one of my missions to be here is, you know, come on, Max, you've been here 2 years, you still can't speak the local language. That's disgraceful, you know. So I need to slap myself around a little bit for that one. Problem is, I've got too many English speakers around, and I'm always so busy doing the work that I do that I just don't have time to learn another language. And the thing about Mexican or Spanish, it's interesting. You can learn words, and I learn all these words. I'll learn 50 words, and I've got them down pat. And when I try to put them into a sentence, they're all different words. You know, like you'll learn a phrase, and oh, you don't have to say that phrase. We've got one word for that phrase. Why didn't I just learn that? You know, so. It's kind of a little frustrating that way, but it's good. It's helping me grow. It's helping my mind stay active. But I think I've still got some purpose here. Every time I go to leave, something happens and I have to stay here. So I'm just going with the flow, you know. I do make all these plans. I've planned to go back to Australia like three times in the last 2 years. And it still hasn't happened because something always just prevents it happening. Nothing that I had planned. But because I don't really have a stake in the outcome, I've just been vaguely thinking, well, I'll go back to there at this date. Well, no, you're not. You're doing something else. So, it's interesting. So I'm totally open to all of it. I mean, I don't know where I'm going to end up. I thought I would end up in Peru, if anywhere. Because I've been to Peru so many times and I do like the place. But then, I mean, Mexico is great. I mean, I love the people. I love the culture. I do feel very at home here. I mean, I'm totally open to it, brother. That's the thing. I don't know where I'm going to end up. I honestly don't. I might end up back in Australia. I could end up anywhere. So, I mean, I think the world's going to pretty much fall apart this year. So who
Seems
knows
to be.
what's going to happen? We could end up in places we never expected to be. So I'm sort of enjoying it, really. I'm enjoying the mystery of life at the moment, and not really having that security that people seem to crave. And like I said, I mean, my whole life has prepared me for this. I've been in rock and roll bands most of my life, living out of a suitcase. When I came to Mexico, I had two small suitcases and a travel guitar and a laptop. That was it. And I'm quite happy to leave with that as well. When I travel, I go traveling for 6 months now, and I just take carry-on luggage when
I
I
hear you.
travel. I mean, I only need three or four changes of clothes and a computer, and I'm good to go. I mean, it's all the great mystery to me, and I'm kind of enjoying the ride. It's like being on a roller coaster, not knowing what's around the corner, and I'm fine with that. I don't need that type of security. I tried that. It didn't lead anywhere because, again, you're judging yourself and you're judging all your life's successes and what you need to do by those parameters of the system. Even when they started restricting people, well, not going to let you go to any of the government designated enjoyment zones, such as restaurants, theaters, parks, all this sort of stuff. I'm going, I don't go to any of those places anyway. It doesn't affect me at all. At all. Like the whole COVID restriction thing, I didn't change my life one single bit. The only thing that changed was that I couldn't get an airline ticket out of the country. But I ended up doing that anyway. Because when I decided it was time to leave, I just thought, okay, well, I want to leave, so there's a process. I'll have to do it. And I just navigated my way through it. And I got out of the country with no jabs, no PCR tests, no masks. I traveled all through Singapore and everything to get to the United States. And they were running around in Singapore airport dressed like Smurfs. They all had blue plastic on and masks and visors. And I'm just walking through. They're all coming up, running up, going, no mask, I just showed them this tag. I says, I'm exempt from wearing a mask for a valid reason. I am exempt for a valid reason. And that was it. I had that around my neck. I picked that up at the markets, $2. And they're going, I haven't seen that exemption anymore. And if you flip it over, there was three websites you could go and visit, which explained why you can't ask me what my valid reason is, because you might be against the Disability Discrimination Act and all this sort of stuff. My valid reason was that I knew COVID was a fraud. I mean, this is a valid reason to me. So I'm not participating in any of your rubbish.
No, I hear
So,
you.
but I just got through. I got through the whole thing. I managed to come through the United States, got through Mexico, got everywhere. And I never participated in the whole. I didn't change my life in any way, except that I left Australia near the end of it because things were just getting too dystopian. And I just had this intuitive feeling that if I didn't leave, I was going to be silenced because I was speaking out pretty outrageously. I'd already been kicked off pretty well everywhere, all my platforms, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, iHeart, SoundCloud, like everywhere you can think of, they just don't want me there. I don't want people getting this message. And I was just, oh, it might be time to leave. And again, I just threw myself to the wind, and here I am. Everything's just worked out great. So yeah, it's the way it goes, brother.
No, I hear you. That's why I took out of Canada at 2020, just January. I had the feeling that they shut down our print, they shut down all kinds of things, and we just couldn't. They locked us out of our warehouse. I remember we were doing print for 12 years, and a lot of your articles were actually in our print magazine, the New Agora. Hey, check out newagora.ca. I'll let everyone know. Got a lot of Max's old articles, information, links to some of the videos, as you can still find them. So it's how I came across Max, back in the day by doing a lot of research on people that were sharing intelligent, wonderful evolutionary and freedom related bits and pieces, and Max was one of the founders. So I just want to say thank you. Thank you for everything you've done. I appreciate it. I really want to get into the human farming, but I think that might be a conversation for another day, because that sounds like something deep, and it's really something with Watiko and Paul Levi and the mind virus and your
We could do
cons.
a whole show on that, brother. We could do a whole hour discussion on that. But at any time, I'm happy to come on and have a chat with you anytime, Lorenzo. It's always good to talk to you, brother. And thank you for saying that. That's very encouraging for you to say that. Very humbling, because I mean, we don't know. We don't know. I don't know Yeah, half the time when I do the radio shows, I mean, like I said, I go off script and it's just a free flow of thought. And I just hope it comes out right, you know. But, you know, half the stuff that I'm saying to people when I get into these spiritual talks on air is, you know, I'm figuring it out as I'm saying it, you know. So, you know, it's just an open free flow of thought that's coming from somewhere, you know. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
I
thank you.
agree. No, you were an inspiration. You don't have to agree with everything everyone says, but if you find the path of why they're doing what they're doing, or you look under into the core of their bravery, or their intent, or their ikigai, their purpose, maybe you can find yours through the I've read somewhere, steady heroes and steady people doing things outside the box. You want to change your life for the better because it can give you some good inspiration. So, once again, thank you so much for being here, Max. I
My
appreciate your
pleasure,
time.
bro.
I will leave. Is the Crow House website and everything still active? Is
Yeah,
it, is that what
the
you?
Crow House is still good. It's still that old HTML website. I still haven't updated it. I'm thinking about it, but yeah. But so no, thank you, brother, and we'll do it again soon, eh?
Okay, I'll leave the links below. Max, thank you so much for joining us. I love you all very much. If anybody has any questions or suggestions, all intelligent participations are welcome, and I'm happy to share them along. Thank you again, Max, and I hope to see you soon.
Freedom first is what I say.